are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to a new edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. You're with Patricia Traina, and I have a fantastic show planned for you guys today. But before I get into the details, I want to share with you guys a special offer that we at Inside Football are extending to our Locked On Podcast family. For those of you who aren't aware, Inside Football is one of the longest-running independent publications covering the New York Giants. It's by subscription only, and I am a senior editor over there. So I do a lot of writing for that publication. And basically what we do is we try to give you material that you are not going to find anywhere else. It is, again, it's solely on the Giants. It's unique material. We cover the OTAs in detail, the mini camps in detail. And we're working on our draft preview issue that is focused on prospects that are a best fit for the Giants and why. So just a lot of great material coming out, and we are offering a spring football package. It's three issues, and you can check it out. It covers April, May, and June, everything you need to know about the draft onward. So head on over to www.insidefootball.com/lockedon. Full details are there, as well as a link if you want to get a sample issue so you can see what we did last year, and some information about a special discount that we're giving the Locked On family when you use the code LOCKEDON at checkout. So head on over, check it out, and hopefully we'll see a few of you guys, you know, signing up for it. Now, regarding today's show, just want to start out with a quick preface here. I always tell you guys that I'm here to serve you. So if there's a particular topic or something that you're interested in hearing, let me know, and if I can make it happen, I will. And this particular show topic was actually the suggestion of Steve and Regina out in California. They wrote in, they said, "Hey, Pat, you know, any chance you can get a former GM to come on the show to talk about, you know, what goes on behind the scenes in a war room?" And I thought, okay, you know, at first I thought, well, that's going to be a tough one. Who can I possibly reach out to? And then I realized there was someone I could reach out to. And I was very fortunate that that individual was nice enough to come on the program with me. That is Michael Lombardi. He's a three-time Super Bowl winning NFL executive, former NFL GM, and currently works for The Athletic. He also has a new podcast that's out, which he'll talk about during the interview. And I just thought it made for a good show. So Michael had a lot of great information that he shared, a lot of great analysis. And hey, you guys asked for this type of show, so you got it. And I'm happy to deliver it to you. So let's jump right into the interview, which starts now. I am delighted to be joined today by Mr. Michael Lombardi, who is a three-time Super Bowl winning football executive. He's also a former NFL general manager. He's got a lot going on these days. He has a new podcast coming out. It's actually dropped, I believe. It's called The GM Shuffle. You can find that on iTunes and any place where you find podcasts distributed. And of course, Mr. Lombardi is also a writer for The Athletic, and he has a book out called The Gridiron Genius. So just a real busy time for you, Mike.
It's been great. Yeah, the offseason, there's no off in the offseason when it comes to the NFL, so it's been fun, and it's an honor to be on the Giants podcast. I mean, I'm always linked to being anti-New York Giants, but that's far from the truth. I love the Giants. I just don't happen to love what they do on the field, but I do love the Giants.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the moves that they've made, because, you know, I've been wanting to get a
an executive, or for, in your case, you know, you're not an executive anymore, but you've worked in that line, and you have probably a better understanding of how these things go down and the decisions that are made. So if we could start off by just kind of, you know, a general question here. When you look at what the Giants are doing, what exactly are they doing? I mean, they're moving Odell Beckham Jr., you know, they're sticking with Eli Manning. I mean, what do you see as the plan for this team?
Well, I think the plan's pretty clear. I think the plan has been in the works since the day Dave Gettleman became I take that back. I think this plan has been in effect since Ernie Accorsi came in to advise the Giants on who to become the general manager. I think the Giants like the way they've always done business. And so they hired Accorsi to come in to reinforce the way they've always done it. And of course, he hired somebody from the Giant family immediately, and Dave Gettleman, and along those lines have convinced themselves that Eli Manning is still a quarterback with a viable future. And they use the word, if we surround them with the right offensive line, if we surround them with the right receivers, if we surround them with the right running back, he can still be an effective player. And they've won 31 games in the last 5 years, one playoff appearance, and that was a loss. So I think that's the plan. The plan has been, we want to be who we are. We want to stay the New York Giants, and we want Eli to be our quarterback.
Now, you know, they moved Odell off the team. They traded him to Cleveland. And, you know, as I look at what they're trying to do, it just seems to me they're trying to eliminate distractions. But in the process, there's been a lot of turnover. There was, like, I think 60% of the roster turned over, you know, last year when Gettleman and Shermer were in their first year. Some additional major turnover this year. I mean, this roster is fast becoming unrecognizable. Is that necessarily a good thing for a team that's, you know, been struggling like the Giants have been? Or is there a danger that this team will just never gel?
Well, I mean, look, change isn't a part of the NFL, and you have to change to get better players. And so you've traded out Odell Beckham. You replaced him with Golden Tate. We'll see how that works out. You know, the Odell Beckham thing, to me, is a situation that the Giants manifested itself in. You know, not many people realize that after the catch, you know, the Giants put the picture of the catch next to the Super Bowl trophies. I mean, they highlighted Odell Beckham as much as any player they've ever had in their organization. They loved him. And they gave him that contract because of it. And now they changed their course. And all this change is really just masquerading the problem that they don't want to deal with, which is they need to rebuild the franchise in starting at the quarterback position. Look, Eli is responsible for two of the greatest Super Bowl wins in the world, and he deserves all the praise he gets. He should be on the Giants Wall of Fame. He's been a very great Giant. But that being said, moving forward, he's not the quarterback of the present or the future.
Now, we talk about locker room culture. That's a big buzzword that Dave Gettleman and Pat Shermer use a lot. How important is that really, you know, towards building a winning franchise?
Well, I mean, look, I think culture is really important to building franchises and winning, you know, and so the culture has to come from the head coach. It's a challenge because the culture has to be part of the organization as well. It's got to start from what type of players you bring in, how you bring those players in. I mean, whether it's, you know, guys that you take in, like Janoris Jenkins, who's had a shady past and you wondered about, even though he's been a very good player. You know, Beckham's had some off the field issues that hasn't been compliant to what you want to do. How you deal with those issues. You know, early part of Ben McAdoo's career, they chose to ignore the fights that Beckham would have with the net. They chose to ignore some of the behavior, you know, and I don't think they ever got it ever fixed. And as they move forward, I don't think it's coming in together there. I think the problem is culture is difficult to build when you don't have a quarterback that you can build the culture around, especially when the players know that the quarterback isn't the same as he's always been.
You mentioned that. I mean, Eli's always been kind of a, you know, he's been a model citizen in the locker room. He's been kind of a leader. You know, when you look at his play on tape, which I'm sure you've done, I mean, is there that much of a drop-off in his performance, or can you trace some of that back to, you know, the offensive lines that he's had and the drop passes, which I think he's been at or near the top of the league?
Well, I think, look, everybody says a quarterback makes the team better. But when a quarterback doesn't play good, they blame the other players. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And so you can't have it both ways. Like, a great quarterback makes the team better. You know, Brett Favre made teams better. You know, like Aaron Rodgers has made the Packers better. There's a lot of times the Packers went to the playoffs and Rodgers was really the reason they went. So, look, I think they're not dealing with it. You can make all the excuses you want. You can build, you can say if we have a better line, if we have a better this. You know, I think when you look at the landscape of what they've been able to accomplish, look at the starts of their seasons. You know, when in September, when things are going and how they have to win, I think the Giants are really just don't want to deal with an issue. They don't want to deal with it. It's one of the hardest things to do in sports, which is to evaluate your own team. And if you're not willing to evaluate your own team correctly, how are you going to evaluate other players? And I think that's what happens here. They're just not willing to be honest. And, you know, look, everybody says, you know, you can't, you're picking on Eli. You know, Eli's still a good player. Well, you know, look, when you won 31 games over 5 years and you think your quarterback's a franchise quarterback, then you better think again.
Speaking of franchise quarterbacks, this year's class, you know, depending on who you talk with, you know, it's either Kyler Murray's your top dog, Dwayne Haskins is your top dog. Some people are now putting, you know, Drew Locke into the conversation at number one, you know, as a first rounder. Same thing with Daniel Jones. Have you ever seen, you know, such indecisiveness regarding a quarterback? And when you look in terms of, you know, identifying your next franchise quarterback, just how slippery a slope is it?
It's really hard. I mean, look, you know, it's reliably reported to me that the Giants loved Davis Webb. They liked him more than Patrick Mahomes in a draft. Now, probably nobody's going to say that's true, but that's reliably reported to me from someone who was inside the draft room. And so it's a hard position to get straightened out. And, you know, they drafted Davis Webb with the expectations he could become the guy. There were people in that building that really, really felt that way. And so it's a hard thing to do. But it's also not hard to figure out when your team doesn't, when your team's 6-10. I mean, when you look at the Giants over the last few seasons, I mean, look, they're starting 2017. They lost the first 5 games of the year. They won one, then they lost the next three. If you have a quarterback who's a franchise quarterback, you're not losing those games. You know, you're not losing that many games in a row. You know, Tom Brady doesn't lose that many games in a row. And then in 18, they start out, lose two, win one, then lose five and a four to five in a row. I mean, you don't do that when you're a franchise quarterback. And so you have to look at the team and be honest. Could we get better? Everybody knows Eli can't throw the ball down the field. Everybody knows it's hard for him to drive it past 45 yards. People defend him that way. And so it's a very challenging endeavor to go about it. And it puts pressure on your offense. It puts pressure on your defense. It puts pressure everywhere.
So if you're in the Giants war room and you're looking at these quarterbacks, because I'm assuming, you know, obviously you don't want to wait till next year because you don't know what's going to happen. Which of these quarterbacks do you feel would be really a good complementary piece to the overall puzzle?
Well, I think it's a challenging year. I'm not sure there's a quarterback. Look, everybody has Haskins as a second quarterback. I think that's more media talk driven than it is by the NFL evaluators. That's really more of the guys that do the mock draft stuff. They just put Haskins there with really no reason to put him there. Haskins has a hard time playing the game in rhythm. Haskins has a hard time with anticipation, two of the critical components to what makes a quarterback very good. Now, does he have size? Does he have a good, strong arm? Yeah. But is he going to eventually become a starting quarterback in the NFL? I think there's a long way to go before you can get there. You know, when you look at some of the other players, whether it's Drew Locke, whether it's, you know, any of the other players that you want to discuss, with the exception of Kyler Murray, who has his own issue.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina, special guest Michael Lombardi. We're going to take a break, come back, and continue the interview. So stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. You're listening to a special three-part interview I've done with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. He now writes for The Athletic. He's got his new podcast that just launched. A lot going on. Of course, he's also an author. He was going to tell us all about it at the end of the interview. But for now, let's go into segment two of our sit-down with Michael Lombardi.
Just switch gears if we could a little bit. I'd like to draw upon your experience as a GM, because a question I get a lot from listeners is what goes into, you know, a draft war room, you know, the decisions that are made, you know, whether or not, you know, should you pick up the phone to make, you know, to make a call? I mean, I guess it's driven by your board and your value, but can you just share some insight, you know, having been an NFL GM, as to, you know, what goes on kind of in that war room? And I know it varies according to team, but just some common things maybe.
Well, you know, look, I grew up in a system that's completely different than most systems in the NFL. You know, it's one of the reasons what Belichick and I, when we developed the grading system in Cleveland, that has been carried over to the New England Patriots today, and it's used at Alabama, and it's used at other schools. Our grading system was not built on what round a player would get drafted in. Our grading system was built on what the player would do for our football team, mm-hmm. and defining that role with the player, the scouting inside out, not outside in. So when you ask me what goes on in draft rooms, the boards that we built when I was with Belichick, or when I was with him in Cleveland and him in New England, those boards are related to what a player could do. The board's graded by starter, potential starter, backup, developmental player, and then they're graded. And then their verbiage tells you what round to pick them in. And so what you're trying to do in the draft is you're trying to utilize your draft picks. Now, if you're picking in the low first round, you're hoping to get a starter. But typically in most drafts, there's maybe 15 to 18 starters that you could say to yourself, this is a bona fide starter. And then there's a bunch of guys who are potential starters. Now, when running a draft, you need to figure out where that line of, I call it the line of demarcation is, which is where that line is, where you think a guy is more than a potential starter. And if you're picking, say you're picking at 21, and there's only truly 10 starters, does it matter if you're picking at 21 or you're picking at 45? It really doesn't, because you're getting a potential starter no matter where you pick. You don't know the name of the player, but you know he's potentially going to start for you at a position. So then you start to decide, do I add more picks? Do I trade down? Or do I trade up to get one of those starters? And that's the things that are going on in the draft room, is based on the board, what the board is telling you by what the players can do for your team, what you need to then do. You can't get married into, I have to have player Y, or I must have player X. You have to grade players and keep emotion out of it.
What about in terms of, you know, we hear about potential trades that are in the making. Like, for example, in the case of the Giants, there are some that believe that they should trade up to, you know, to get Quinn and Williams, for example, or trade from 17 to get up and get a quarterback. What goes into some of those decisions?
Well, I mean, it depends on where you value the player. Now, the Giants, what people don't understand about the Giants, and one of the things I think you have to really understand is the Giants use a grading system that's built on size and speed. So basically, when George Young took over the team in 1978, he came in with a system that started in New England, was worked its way through Dallas. It's a size and speed system, which it means simply is this: every position has a prerequisite for the size, speed, intelligence that's required to play the position. And if a player doesn't meet those size, speed requirements, then he gets a letter. And if he gets a letter there because he's deficient in size or speed, then he gets lower in the draft. And if certain positions can only be drafted at certain levels of the draft. So, for example, again, this falls back in line with what can he do for our team. If a guy can only be a potential starter, then you can't draft him in the first 10 picks. If he's a true starter or a true bona fide starter, you can. And so this grading system for the Giants is all predicated on size and speed. So when the Giants put together their board, they're going to want to try to get players that fit that size speed. Now, how many of those guys are available? The reason you would trade up for Quinton Williams if you want to is because you feel like if where we're picking, we're not going to get a player of that value where we are, so we might as well give away a pick to get a blue chip player. I'm not sure that's the case in this draft, or the Giants would do that, because that's typically not what they do.
Now, there's also been a lot of talk with the Giants and Josh Rosen, you know, possibly them putting their hat into the ring to get Josh Rosen. A, where would you rank Josh Rosen compared to this year's quarterback class? And B, what do you think the value is to acquire Rosen if you were, you know, if you were engineering this trade?
Well, I think, look, Rosen's value has gone. Once a guy gets drafted and he plays, he has had 14 interceptions, 11 touchdown passes. He didn't play very well. Not all of it his responsibility, but he didn't play very well. And there were some concerns of him coming out in the draft. And so I would think that it would be very challenging for the Cardinals to trade Rosen unless they've got a third round pick at minimum for the player. And I think that, you know, that would be the best that they could hope for. Now, would you be willing to pay that? I don't know. I think when you're paying a third round pick for a player, you're really not saying he's a starter. You're saying he's a potential starter. Does this player have the potential to be the starter? Does he have the components we want in terms of his character, in terms of his mental makeup to handle the position? And I think that's something that the Giants would need to go back to their evaluations when he came out in the draft and feel like they're comfortable with that.
Going back to something you said before about, you know, the height, the speed, and you know, the size for the Giants and how they approach things, you know, in NFL scouting, obviously there's core traits for every single player, regardless of the position. Then you have your position traits, and some players are going to be a little bit more developed in certain position traits than others, depending on the program they come from, depending on the coaching they receive. How much of a factor, though, does that come into play? In other words, if you have let's say a tight end that you like, but, you know, maybe he's not as refined in you know, a specific position trait, but you say to yourself, you know what, we've got a pretty good tight end coach, we can work with this. Does that affect the value that much on the board?
Not really, no, because I think what you're saying is you know there's room for growth with the player. You're in the grade is really, you're describing that growth. You're talking about that player improving. So I don't see that as something that, you know, like if you take a small school kid, you know there's going to be a chance for development. But the development's really going to come from the off-season program. The development's going to come from strength and conditioning and getting them body stronger and their frame. You know, a lot of these kids, because of the 20-hour rule, aren't able to do the things that they need to do in the off season and during the season. So, yeah, you're always going to have a leeway in terms of your grading system for upscale. But and sometimes it works against them. You know, you take a guy from Alabama who's played in their secondary. You know, that player's probably not going to get any improved because at Alabama they coach the hell out of their secondary, and that's probably as good as that guy can play.
When we look at this draft class, you know, obviously everybody has agreed that the defense is the strength of the class, and particularly front seven guys. Based on your knowledge of the Giants' defensive system and what they run, is it more of a, you know, if you were advising them on this draft, would you say, you know, guys, we got to go front seven, or, you know, do we go back seven in this case?
Look, I'm a big believer in the front seven, so I think that the game's won by who you have in the front. I think that's pretty clear. I think there's no doubt the game comes to, and you know, when you lose a guy like Olivier Vernon, who did not play last year, he had a bad ankle, you know, and now you're trying to replace him with Kareem Martin, or you're trying to replace him with some other rusher, and you know, from the outside linebacker position, Lorenzo Carter, you need a way to get to the passer, because the pressure is going to be on whomever the corners end up being. You know, Jenkins will be one of the corners. Who else will be the other corner remains to be seen. So I think there's a true challenge. You got to find dominant defensive front players. And when you look at this Giant defense, there's holes all over the place. The talent level of the defense is not very good. They're going to have to find a way to improve it. And you can get a bona fide rusher that can do that. That will take a lot of the pressure off the secondary people.
Were you surprised that the Giants, three out of their four free agent acquisitions were all former defensive players for the Cardinals?
Well, you know, I mean, not really. I don't think that was like we want the Cardinals to play in great defense, but I think there's familiarity with the player, and they know the player knows the system, and that always helps. That's, you know, that's the coach of the system driving it, and in this case, I think that's probably accurate.
Okay, turning now, Michael, I want to talk a little bit about your book, Gridiron Genius. It's the Masterclass in Winning Championships and Building Dynasties. I believe the book came out last winter, was it?
No, it came out last September, right at the beginning of the season.
Okay, well, in talking about that book, I just, you know, what are some of the core principles that, you know, you touch upon in the book? I mean, obviously, we don't want to give the whole thing away, but just what are some of the key things that you've noticed winning teams have really honed in on and you know, the last several years?
Well, Well, I think it's really about culture. And I think one of the reasons I knock the Giants a lot is I think the Giants' methodology of how they set up their organization doesn't work. It worked back in the day before free agency and when George was doing it and they won two Super Bowls because the draft was centrally that. But the coach has to really be involved in player personnel. It can't be scout, coaches, coach. I think that separation makes it very difficult. There has to be a partnership between the head coach and the general manager. And that partnership has to be ideology aligned. It has to be philosophically aligned. It's got to be working together in that area. And, you know, and so my book is really about that. My book's about culture. My book's about organizations and why organizations win, because they really are working hand in hand and working together, you know. And I think that's the key to what they do. And look, the coach has to have the authority and has to have, when he stands in front of the team, he's got to be able to say, you know what? You play for me, I'm going to fire you if you don't play good enough. And if the players think they play for the general manager, then there's that separation. And if the general manager controls their employment, it makes it very difficult to get the kind of culture you need to be able to win. And I think that's one of the biggest issues.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because when Jerry Reese was the general manager, I couldn't prove this, but I always had the feeling that there was a disconnect between Reese and Tom Coughlin. I think, you know, and again, you would know better than I would here, but I get the impression that Gettleman, you know, also having trained under George, well, he didn't train under George Young, he trained under Ernie Accorsi, who, of course, was a George Young disciple. I get the impression that Dave Gettleman is more in tune with working with the head coach and making sure that he gets them the type of players that they feel they need. I mean, do you see that as well, or is it too soon to say?
I think it's a little too soon to say. I mean, obviously they're doing some things to help the defense, the guys that know it. I think it happens more in pro, but the coaches aren't that big involved in the college draft, especially they let the scouts do it. And, you know, I think when you look at that, I don't think it's always going to be, it's going to work. I think there has to be a harmony and there has to be a unification of the positions. And I think that's part of the ever-going change that has to happen in New York. I think they have to change how they set it up. I mean, their scouting system is kind of, it's still an effective system for what they want, but I'm not sure all the coaches on their staff believe in size and speed. You know, when Parcells was there, they all believed in size and speed. That's Belichick. He came to Cleveland. He brought the New York Giants grading system into his meeting in Berea with me. And from that system, we then changed and evolved it into what we call the Cleveland Browns system, which is now called the Patriot Way. So it has to be a unison. It has to be worked together. And then the guy who's really controlling the team, the coach, and stands in front of the team, he's got to control whether the player's on the roster or not. If it's coming from the GM's chair, you know, it's that becomes part. That becomes very difficult. And this whole control for 53 is ridiculous, because you can only dress 46. You know, and so the coach should be able to control 50 players on his roster.
Right.
And if he wants to fire any one of those 50, he can. And then from player 51 to 63 on the practice squad, that's for the next year's team. That's for down the road. And I think that that's really what should happen. And I think the Giants are operating in a time when they did win with that system, but I'm not sure it can work anymore.
Mike, if I could just clarify this size and speed concept. I mean, you can look at a guy, you know, and I'll give you an example. A few years ago, the Giants had drafted a receiver by the name of Ramses Barden. Had size, he had speed, but
right.
He didn't pan out. I mean, so
right.
There has to be more to it, I would think, isn't there?
Well, there is, but, you know, he met the size and speed requirement. Now, the problem with a lot of those guys from Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo back then is I'm not sure how they were all getting their speed and their athleticism. I mean, a lot of those guys worked out like warriors from Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, but I'm not sure they played like warriors, you know? Like, let's just take Kyler Murray, for example. The Giants could never draft Kyler Murray because he does not meet the height requirement on their draft board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what that makes him right now is that would make him a G player, meaning an undersized for the position. And the highest grade they could give a G player is 64. Now, that 64 grade means he's in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
He could be in the third round. Okay, now, there is a category called the C player, which means he's undersized, but he's so spectacular that he'll overcome his lack of size or speed to dominate the position. And I mean dominate. Now, do you think you can give Murray the C grade? I don't think you could. C grades are really the exception, not the rule. So I think that that's why he's probably on their board right now. Murray's probably a G63, 62.
And then we also got to look at character and medical issues. I mean,
those letters add into it too. Right. So if you don't have size and speed, and then you have a character issue, now you have more letters. The object of the system is to draft players without letters. And in the Giants' way, the object of the system is to draft what they call I players. They're clean, meaning the label is clean. They're I-69. They have. They're completely clean in terms of their ability to meet the requirements. There's no letters on them.
Giant fans, you're listening to Locked On Giants. This is Patricia Traina, and you are actually listening to my three-part interview with Mike Lombardi, former NFL GM, three-time Super Bowl NFL executive. Writes for The Athletic, has his own podcast. He's an author of a book. And in this next segment coming up after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about his book. We're going to talk a little bit about the podcast and a few more, pre-draft thoughts from Mike on how the NFL teams usually run their war rooms. So stay with us.
Let's talk a little bit about your podcast that just recently dropped, the GM Shuffle. Can you just give listeners a little overview as to what what the program format is, what you are looking to disseminate as far as information goes?
Well, what we're going to do is it's going to be me and Adnan Verik from formerly from ESPN, now with The Zone on Major League Baseball. He's a huge football fan. We're going to talk about all the things in football every week. We're going to break down teams. We're going to break down games. We're going to maybe talk a little bit about some movies. We're going to talk about some pop culture. We're going to talk about a lot of different things. I had it's going to be similar to the podcast that I had before, only, it's going to be, just he and I talking. Probably won't have any guests, and I think we'll just go forward from there.
And then what do you have coming up on The Athletic? Anything in particular you want people to look out for?
I'm going to work on the draft this week. Next week, I'm going to start taking people inside the draft room and going from there, and then analyzing the draft when we finally have that draft day.
All right. Sounds like a lot of great stuff coming up.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming on the program with me. That's Michael Lombardi. Thank you, Giant fans, for listening.